So thank you all for coming. Tonight's topic is how to properly kasher for Pesach. Honestly, this is a topic that gets me very nervous because Pesach is coming up. Actually, I'm at a stage in life now where I really do make Pesach at home. I'm also at a stage in life where it's around, 13 days until Pesach, 12 days until Pesach, and I haven't done anything yet. So the basic story is, as Pesach approaches, we begin to think about how to properly kasher. And it's not a simple matter to kasher for Pesach. There's many halachos. I have a full book over here called Hagalas Kelim, which is like the how to kasher for Pesach. Different appliances are kashered in different ways depending on how the appliance is used. Is the appliance used over a direct fire? Is the appliance used to get with water, etc.? Different materials for the various appliances can all impact on how we kasher it. So there's a lot to say. And we should also mention at the outset that when we talk about kashering, we're not only talking about kashering for Pesach. A good chunk of what we're discussing tonight will be relevant, just in case, and this does come up all the time. Something goes wrong in your kitchen. So how do you kasher that thing that goes wrong in your kitchen? So that also will come up in our discussion. So the first issue I want to talk about with you tonight is, should we be kashering for Pesach at all? Right? Maybe we should say that we should avoid kashering for Pesach altogether, buy new stuff. Okay, if you can afford it. Go out to the store, buy a... Right? And I think most of us who make Pesach, we don't really kasher silverware so much anymore. There's still some people kasher silverware. People certainly don't kasher pots anymore, right? Some, maybe, a little bit. Not so much, right? By and large, we buy new things for Pesach. We have separate Pesach utensils. But the question is, is this really required? Do I need separate things for Pesach? Is it l'chatchila even to have separate things for Pesach? Maybe I should just kasher everything. Right? That's what we have to discuss. So there's a Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Lamed Amid Beis, which I didn't print out on the source sheet. But the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Lamed Amid Beis basically just says that Ravina says to Rav Ashi, he asked him a question, how do you kasher knives for Pesach? Right? It's a hot topic in the time of the Gemara. I have a knife, how do I kasher it? So Rav Ashi responded, I don't kasher my knife at all, I buy new ones. So Ravina says, yeah, but if you would kasher it, what would you do, right?
For Pesach,
right? Pesachim, dachlamen on the base, how do you kasher the knife? So he says, I get new knives for Pesach. And all the poskim basically conclude from this Gemara that you should get new knives for Pesach. You should not kasher your knives. But there is some discussion about whether this is true only of knives or this is true of everything. You see, the Rishonim point out, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that knives, especially a knife with a serrated edge, is very, very difficult to kasher. Part of kashering is going to be cleaning the item out, no? You have to make sure it's clean. If you have a knife with a serrated edge, kashering it can be very difficult, right? Because you can't get it clean enough. So it could be that when the Gemara says, I get new knives, that's just because a knife is a hard thing to kasher, and anything that's difficult to kasher, buy a new one. Anything that the kashering is questionable, if it can be done at all, buy a new one. Maybe that's what the Gemara says. On the other hand, there is a discussion in the poskim that some assume, and the Mishnah Berurah, by the way, quotes, you should buy new knives for Pesach. Some say, oh, the Mishnah Berurah means only new knives. Others say, no, what the Mishnah Berurah means, and it's based on the Taz, and it's based on the Yisod V'Shor Sha'avoda, right? Maybe, right, not only knives, but maybe everything. You should try to buy a new kelim for Pesach in general. As a general rule, I don't think we try to buy everything new for Pesach. It's a waste of money. We kasher, as a general rule. But things, you should know, things that are very hard to kasher, don't kasher. And if it would take you hours and hours and hours to clean it out properly, so maybe it's worth making a calculation that you should buy something new instead of spending all the time to kasher it. So that's something that we will discuss as we go on. In certain communities, like down the street over here in Breuer's, there is a communal Hagolas Kelim. The entire community comes together, and the Dayanim, the rabbis in town, like paskin on any shiloh that comes up in Hagolah. They are much more machmir than I would be. I remember bringing pots there, and they tell me that my pot isn't clean enough. So, okay. I mean, so I still found some other ways of kashering it, even though they tell me the pots weren't clean enough. But this notion that things have to be perfectly clean to kasher is very, very important. Right? But it's important only for one type of kashering. Okay, let's go back to basics. There are two ways of kashering things. There is Hagala and Libun. Hagala means that I immerse my keli, my non-kosher item, I immerse it in boiling water. There's some discussion in Poskim about whether the water actually has to be boiling, 212, like bubbling, right? Or any really, really hot water, even if it's not 212, is good. This comes up more in industry than it comes up for here. The OU has a whole tshuva about kashering a plant that makes chocolate, no? Apparently, the none of your chocolate is going to be kosher l'Pesach, according to the Taz. I'll say it like this. The Taz is the one who says that in order to kasher, you need 212. You need really boiling, bubbling water. Apparently, the type of equipment that is used to manufacture chocolate, if you're going to put water at 212 on that equipment, it'll ruin the whole thing. No? So, they have a cheshbin. Well, they say, we know that this equipment only works at 160. We'll kasher at 160. Right? It never gets hotter than 160. They know exactly. It's perfectly calibrated. Right? So, the OU is makel, that they will kasher at 160, or if something never gets above it. Even though, according to the Taz, the simple reading of the Taz, right, you can never kasher less than 212. You always need boiling water. So that's kashering type number one, Hagala.
What does the water have to be in?
So the water has to be in a keli, right, that is boiling, right? The simplest form of Hagala is Hagala Nekli Rishon. We'll talk about that. We'll get to all these details. So that is kashering type number one. That is Hagala. Kashering type number two is called Libun. Libun is very different than Hagala. Libun means I burn it. And my son is very excited about doing Libun. He's like, Abba, I want to help you kasher because my Rebbe said we need a blowtorch. So I'm like, we're not going to do a blowtorch at home. And it's sound advice, by the way, to try to avoid a blowtorch at all costs, especially if you don't know what you're doing. When I moved into my apartment the first time, I tried to be machmir and have my super come up with a blowtorch to try to kasher the oven. The oven didn't do all that well from the experience. You have to be careful with this stuff. Yeah.
How would you kasher a outside grill?
Right, so an outside grill, you could use a blowtorch or you use the coals. The coals are real fire. What's a blowtorch? A blowtorch basically is fire. Libun means that I purge it with fire. I have actual fire. It's sorfo bimkomo. That's an expression that the Rishonim use. You burn the iser where it is. You burn it, right? So I need real fire. So I have an outside grill. I need to kasher my grill for Pesach. Why? Because, you know, it was in contact with chametz, especially the way I grill stuff. I always put the buns on the grill, right? So if I want to use that grill again on Pesach, so what I have to do is I have to burn it, right? Sarfo bimkomo, I take the coals, I light them on the grill, it will become kosher, excellent.
How
long do you have to do it? Until it gets red hot. Now, our metal today will never get red hot. Our metal today, right? We shouldn't speak about metal getting red hot. The assumption is that's around 750 degrees Fahrenheit. Our metal today is processed in the way that it will not become red hot. Okay. But if we assume that if it gets to that temperature of around 700, 750, so that will kasher for sure, no problem. That's called Libun. Now, technically speaking, for Hagala, if I'm immersing it in water, in boiling water, I have to clean the keli. It has to be perfectly clean. If I'm doing libun, I don't have to clean it. If I'm doing libun, I'm burning the iser out, so I don't have to clean the keli at all. What I do is I take my blowtorch and I just incinerate the thing. Any dirt that's there is going to be incinerated, the same as the treifas get incinerated, and everything will be fine. Okay, so that's the difference between Hagola and Libun. Yeah?
By Hagola, you still have the heter of a chatzitz of liot v'eino makir?
No. No, that's a halacha only by tevila.
Oh.
If I put something into the mikvah, well, if it's a tiny amount, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm not talking about putting it into the mikvah. Putting it into the mikvah is when I buy a kli from a guy.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's tevilas kelim. This is Hagolas kelim. This is kosherizing. I don't know if it was a chum yisera, just they look at the kelim much more carefully than I did. Certain things which I wouldn't consider dirt. Okay, you know what it is? The achronim all say that when I try to get the dirt off of my keli for hagala, you try once, you try twice. If there's some discoloration, but there's no mamushas to it, there's no substance to it, that doesn't invalidate my hagala. So I try to get it off once, I try to get it off twice. If it's still there, kasher it. Right? Down the block, they are... Rav Posen is more nervous than I am about what's considered discoloration versus what's considered mamoshes. So I'll tell you what I did, though. I'll tell you what I did. When Rav Posen told me that I couldn't kasher that pot that I wanted to kasher, this was a few years ago. I wasn't even the rabbi here yet, so no one knew me. That was great. What I did was I took the pot home and I put the pot in my stove. When I turned my stove up to the highest it gets, which is around 550, and I put my pot in. Now, how does that help? That helps because when we talk about libun, there is a machlokas in Rishonim about what libun is. Right? That's actually in the first source that we see over here. Okay? Let's read the first source. Kelim shemishtamshim bahem ayidei ha'ar. Those utensils that are used on the fire itself. Kigon, shpudin, va'askela osu kielti bahem. A shpud is like a spit, no? It's a spit, a piece of metal, let's say. If it's wood, a wooden spit, you probably can't kasher it. It's going to get burned. Fine, so these things, tzrichim libun, you have to burn them out. V'halibun hu achiyu nitzotzos nitzin mehem. Libun means until the sparks come shooting out. That's going to be around 750, they assume. V'yesh haga, the Rama says, v'yesh mikilim im nislabin kolkach shekash nisraf alav mibachutz. There are some who are makel to say that libun doesn't mean there has to be 750. It doesn't mean that the sparks have to come out, right? Libun is that it gets so hot that when straw touches the outside of the item, the straw burns. Now, the tinseling point for straw is around 450. Now, I'm talking about Fahrenheit, by the way. All my temperatures are in Fahrenheit. Tinseling point for straw is around 450. Says the Rama, there are some who are makol, if I heat it until 450, that's a Mordechai. V'nohagin kisvar vishona b'chol davar shedino b'libun. Avo davar shedino b'hagola. Rak sheish bo siddakin. Oshim achmirun alabno sagi b'libun kal kazeh. Zop the Rama, something that really you could do hagola to. Really you could immerse in hot water. But, right, there are certain cracks, or for whatever the reason you want to be machmir to do libun, in that situation, you don't have to do the more chomor type of libun, the libun of 750. I could do libun of 450, right, just put it in my oven. So what I did with this pot, when Rav Posen told me that I couldn't kasher it because there was some dirt on it, right? So that means, okay, I can't do hagola. When there's dirt on it, you can't do hagola, but I could do the more mekel type of libun. So I take it home, put it in my oven, turn my oven up to 550. It's even better than 450. And even in my oven that doesn't have the best thermostat in the world, by 550 it gets at least to 450. Right? So then that's going to be okay. Right? Because that's called libun kal.
The oven was already clean for Pesach.
What? First I turned the oven up. Right? I kashered the oven that way. We'll talk about kashering the oven in a few minutes. First I kashered the oven. and I put it in. Even if I didn't kosher the oven already, it would be okay, as long as there's no dirt that you see. But we'll talk about that in a few minutes. Okay.
Why don't you always do that? Why would you ever reserve time?
Yeah, so the only reason you would not do this all the time is if you're worried that certain kalim would get ruined by sticking them in the oven at 450. But anything that I could kosher through hagala, that I could kosher through putting into boiling water, I could also kosher through libun kal. And libun kal, a maisa, solves many problems because you don't have to clean it off. Now, there is a chumra of a prima gadim in one place who says that when I'm doing libun kal instead of hagala, I should also clean it off. But technically speaking, it's not necessary. You could really kosher things through libun kal. Okay. Let's take a step back. So I have these two methods of koshering. I have hagala and libun. I kosher through boiling water, I kosher through burning it with a fire. Two methods of koshering. How do I know which is which? How do I know when to do libun, when to do hagala? So, this is actually, by the way, you should know that libun and hagala are in two different places in the Torah. In Parshas Matos, the Torah says, Kol davar asher yavol ba'ish tavir ba'ish v'taher, etc. That means libun. You pass it through the fire. In Parshas Tzav, right, the Torah says, Umorak v'shutaf b'mayim, that you rinse it off, you purge it with boiling water. So that is called hagala. Rav Soloveitchik always used to comment that this year it doesn't work out. But most years, Parshas Tzav is leaned right before Pesach in order to tell you to kasher your kalim, because the Torah in Parshas Tzav speaks about kashering kalim through hagala. Okay, so in one place the Torah says, in the context of kodshim, umorak v'shutaf b'mayim, that you do hagala. Elsewhere, in the context of the war against Midian, the Torah says, the way I kasher is kol davar asher yavo ba'esh tavir ba'esh b'taher, anything that became non-kosher through a direct fire, I have to kasher through a direct fire. If it became non-kosher through water, I kasher through water. That's the simple reading of that pasuk in Matos, although the Ramban there discusses that maybe that's a reference to tevilas kelim, not to hagolas kelim. Fine. So, the Gemara, at the end of Avodah Zarah, the last page in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara asks the question, when do I need Hagala, when do I need Libun? Obviously, right, something that goes on the direct fire needs Libun. And something that's not on direct fire, something that came non-kosher through water, a pot, will never need Libun. Right? If I cook pork in a pot and there's water in the pot, that pot will never need Libun, because the pork is going into the pot via water. The only time libun would ever be required is if the iser goes in directly, without a medium. The iser and the keli are touching. That's the only time you'd ever need libun. And the Gemara at the end of Avodah Zarah asks a contradiction. One source says that the spit requires libun. Another source says that the spit requires hagala. What? Big contradiction. So the Gemara answers, right? And the Mishnah Berurah actually summarizes this discussion. Here, let's read the first source in the Mishnah Berurah. Akdim akdama katsara v'yitzterech b'kamem komos. I'll give you a short introduction that will be necessary in many places. Da, the isa b'gemara, the davka dvar iser hanivla b'kli al yidei or tzarech libun. Avo dvar heter hanivla b'kli al yidei or avsha achar kach ne'esa k'gom bosa kachrim shetzalu b'shpud al gabi ha'or ashel basof nasa b'liya b'shpud nosa filohachi yapshev shpud zeh zay b'hagola. Boom. Says the Mishnah Berurah, the only time, based on this last Gemara in Avodah Zarah, libun is only required when I have treif that touches a kli directly. But if I have kodshim that touches a kli, kodshim is a carbon. When the carbon goes into the kli, let's say I roast a carbon on a kli. When it goes into the kli, is it kosher? Absolutely it's kosher. I could eat it, right? It becomes treif later on. It becomes nosar later on. But when it goes in, it's kosher. In that situation, since when it went in, it was kosher, so then I never need libun, I only need hagala. Even though it's directly contacted. And that's what the Gemara answers, that the spit, right, the spit by kachin only needs hagala. But the spit by midyan, when, right, what's it called, like in Hawaii, the luau or something, when they roast the pig with the apple, right? So, if you have one of those things, I actually mentioned this in Shir, it, to my students the other day. So the guy goes, yeah, you know, my brother, the guy's a gayer, whatever. He goes, like, yeah, my brother got married and they had a luau at the wedding. I'm like, whoa, that's really cool. Right. So there you have it. We get everything. But so if I have the spit for real treifus, so then I have to do libun, okay? Because the treif is touching it directly, and pig is inherently treif, right? As opposed to kachem, which right now is kosher and becomes treif later, pig is treif now. In the Gemara's language, this is a difference between hetera bala and isura bala, between absorbing kosher and absorbing non-kosher. That's the language that the Gemara uses. Now, okay, so what's chametz? Chametz is heter. Right now, I eat chametz. I eat chametz for supper tonight. I'm going to eat chametz tomorrow, the next day. I'm going to eat chametz a lot, right? So, chametz is hetera bala, presumably. That's what Rabbi Nutam says. Rabbi Nutam in Taisun Chulun Daf Ches, Rabbi Nutam in Taisus and Psachim Daf Lamed Amid Beis, Rabbi Nutam in a few places says chametz is called hetera bala. However, the Ramban disagrees with Rabbi Nutam, no? The Ramban assumes that chametz is not hetera bala, but we treat chametz like it's iser bala. Chametz is like pig. What does that mean? That means that there's an iser chametz all year long. The way Rav Soloveitchik used to explain it is that all year long you can't have chametz, let's say, in the Beis HaMikdash.
Okay, so
right?
I got a question.
Sure.
If we say that we're supposed to use fire for something like that, then why is it specifically stuff like wine cups, then you would use immersion?
So wine cups never become non-kosher on a direct fire. Right? Remember, anything that becomes non-kosher through a direct fire maybe requires libun, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But something that becomes non-kosher through a medium, how's my wine cup going to get non-kosher? Why do I kosher my bechers at all? Anyone know why? It's very weird.
Is it like on the table?
It's on the table. Okay, so it's on the table. What's the big deal? Rinse it off. Why did I kosher it? B'chumra of Pesach, that's one reason. The Mishnah Berurah says, you know why I kasher my wine cups? Because maybe, okay, my wife would kill me if I ever said the story, but if you leave bread in the cup for more than 24 hours just soaking there, right, so then there's real treif bread in the cup. That could, in theory, happen, but we don't like to talk about it.
Washing with a chametzik sponge
with hot water, maybe. Maybe. If you wash with the chametzik sponge in hot water, that could also make it chametzik. Okay. But you need some way that the treifus actually gets embedded in the becher. So we kasher our bechers. I remember my mother has a practice that she kashers her leichter for Pesach. I have no idea where she got this from. My grandmother used to do this also. I guess that's where my mother got it from. But I did not see it in any svarim that says that you should kasher your leichter for Pesach, nor do you have to kasher the tray where the leichter go on. There is no need to kasher them. Some say that what you should do is you shouldn't have the tray directly on the table, on your Pesach Tik table. You should maybe put a little piece of tinfoil under that tray just in case there's like a breadcrumb on the bottom of the tray. But there's no reason to kasher your leichter or your trays for the leichter. Okay? That's the big cool. That's the biggest cool I'm giving you tonight. Fine. The becher we do hagala because maybe it became non-kosher through kavush. And therefore, through kavush is soaking for 24 hours, therefore we do hagala. That's our practice.
When we say that if it came in contact with something that may be non-kosher, then we use the fire?
Well, only if it came in contact with hot non-kosher directly. Right? Remember, the becher becomes non-kosher because you have some bread that is soaking with a medium, with
that's
a liquid medium, fresh in the becher.
That's not hot.
Not hot. Okay. No. I don't think I put hot bread in my bechers.
Right.
I don't know anyone who does. Okay. Fine. So there's a discussion in Rishonim whether chametz on Pesach is considered hetera bala or isura bala, Rabbi Nutam against the Ramban. Shulchan Aruch assumes over here that chametz on Pesach is isura bala. No? It says a shpud, this is Simin Tuf Nun Aleph, Sif Dalet, the first source that we have. It says that a shpud, a spit that I use for chametz, He says, I have to do libun on it. I have to, right, really put the fire directly to it until the sparks come out. That means that we're assuming that the chametz was embedded in that spit, and it is called isura bala, and as isura bala, I have to do libun. If I would treat chametz like hetera bala, I would kasher my spit just by immersing it in boiling water, which is a much less complicated procedure. It's much easier. Fine. The problem is like this. The problem is that Shulchan Aruch contradicts himself, no? The third source that we have on the sheet is Simen Tufnun Beis Seif Aleph. Let me just give you a bit of an introduction. There's a concept in Yoredeya called Nat Bar Nat, right? Which means double infusion of taste or secondary infusion of taste, okay? The case is like this. Let's say I have some treif that goes into a pot. I cook pig in my pot, so now there's treif in the walls of that pot. Then I clean the pot out, perfectly clean, and then I put water in that pot, or I cook macaroni in that pot. Right? So what happens? The taste of the pig that went into the pot is going to leave the pot and go into my macaroni. That's secondary taste. That's not bar not, right? Now, the Rishonim ask a question. Secondary taste is a problem, right? In other words, no one would eat noodles that were cooked in a pot that just cooked pig in it beforehand, right? Those noodles we assume is treif. So how do I ever kasher a keli? Think about it. Shouldn't I be nervous that when I take this keli, this pot, this non-kosher pot, right, it has pig in it, I immerse it in boiling water. Okay, very nice. You immerse it in boiling water. Now, you know what you did? You just spread it. The cooties are going further, right? Because I have kids, right? It now, instead of just having a treif pot, now I have treif water also. And maybe that treif water is going to come back into my pot, right? It's going to zap back. So how do I solve the problem? How do I ever solve the problem? How do I ever kasher a keli? That's what the Rishonim asked the question. Yeah.
Isn't that why we wait 24 hours for a
kasher? Oh, so there are two answers that are given in Rishonim to this question. Okay? One answer that's given in Rishonim is, don't kasher a pot within the first 24 hours of the pig going into it. Right? After 24 hours, there's a concept called nosin tam mufgam, that the taste is putrid. Once the taste is putrid, so it can't adversely influence the water.
Would that be the same thing for an oven or a microwave?
Yeah, probably. We'll talk about it. Maybe, maybe not. We'll get there in a few minutes.
Okay.
I do plan on getting to ovens, but
okay.
I want to just finish this. I want to get to ovens. So I wait 24 hours. That's one approach. The other approach that it says in Shulchan Aruch is don't wait 24 hours, but make sure you have 60 times more water that you're kashering in than the volume of treif that went into the pot. This is very complicated to figure out. Great mathematicians have been stumped trying to figure out shishim. We try because of the complications of calculating how much treif went in. If I know that 1 ounce of pig went into the pot, right, so then I would need, 60 ounces, assuming there was nothing else ever cooked in that pot beforehand, so I'd need 60 ounces of water to get it out, or a little more than 60, so it's going to be batel b'shishim. We find this very complicated, these calculations, so we don't do shishim, but there are two ideas mentioned in Rishonim. I could either kasher with shishim, or I could kasher after the kli is eino ben yomo, after the kli is no longer within 24 hours of absorbing the non-kosher. Okay, Mark?
So why not just rely on that eino ben yomo, why kasher at all after that?
So the Gemara says, once a keli is eino ben yomo, even though it can't make my food treif, but it's usher to use that keli. There's a gezeira, that same daf in Avodah Zarah says, it's a gezeira of a keli, eino ben yomo, ata kli ben yomo. There's an iser, according to some in Iser Dairaisa, probably in Iser Drabonon, to use a keli that is non-kosher, even though it won't make my food non-kosher. B'di'evet, right? You call me with the shayla, you say, I cooked pig in the pot 2 days ago, and now I cooked my cholent in the same pot. What's the din? The cholent is kosher. The cholent is perfectly kosher, right? But you're not allowed to cook the cholent in the non-kosher pot. That's the issur of using a keli she'eino ben yomo. That's why we kasher. Yeah, it's an isidra rabbanon. Fine. Yeah.
You just said the chance it would be kosher. How would it be kosher if you're not allowed to use that pot because it's not kosher?
Sometimes I'm not allowed to use something, but even though I'm not allowed to use it, it doesn't mean that the food that I cook in it becomes treif. Right? I'm not allowed to use it. It's like an isser on me. Okay. Fine. Let's just try to... So basically, the poskim say that if I want to kasher my pot, I have two options. My pot from pig. One option is make sure I have 60 times more water. The other option is make sure it's eino ben yomo. However, if the item that's in my pot is not really treif, let's say it just absorbed something that will become treif later. So then, right, that's called hetera bala. And by hetera bala, I do not need all of these fancy conditions. I could kasher a pot that absorbed heter, right? I could kasher it even though I don't have 60 times, and even though it's within 24 hours. Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, that if, when I want a kasher from Chametz on Pesach, you know when I should kasher? I should kasher Erev Pesach before the fifth hour in the day. Why? Because at that point, I don't have to worry if the keli is eino ben yomo, I don't have to worry if I have shishim, just kasher early in the day. That means that Shulchan Aruch is assuming that the Chametz in my pot is not like pig. The chametz in my pot is hetera bala. It's more like kodshim that will become treif later on. Right now it's kosher. If it would be isura bala, so then I'd have to wait 24 hours after using the chametz, or I'd have to make sure I have shishim. But Shulchan Aruch says, in Siman Tov Nun Beis Se'if Aleph, Yesh li zahir lahagil kodim shachamishis, kedesh lo yitzref ledaktek if the kelim are b'nei yom or not. Right? In other words, you don't have to be nervous. Who cares? Let's say the pot is not ben yomo, right? Let's say the pot is ben yomo. Let's say the pot was used within 24 hours. It doesn't matter. I could still kasher that pot. So the Mishnah Berurah and everybody asks a contradiction in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, you told me before that chametz on Pesach is considered isura bala. Therefore, you need libun. If you need libun, so then you should always have to have shishim. Well, you should always have to make sure that it's not ben yomo. Right? Shulchan Aruch contradicts himself. So, the Mishnah Berurah writes that fundamentally, Shulchan Aruch assumes that chametz on Pesach is isura bala. And really, there's a mistake in Shulchan Aruch. Right? That's the Bir Halacha here in Siman Tov Nun Beis. Again, time is a little bit late, so I'm not going to read the sources inside so much. But in Siman Tov Nun Beis, the Bir Halacha says, you know what? It says in Shulchan Aruch that you are allowed to kasher chametz, even though you just used it minutes ago. Right? You can kasher the pot? Not true. We paskin, you have to wait 24 hours. Because we paskin to see Surah Bala. That's what the Mishnah Berurah assumes. Rav Schechter, when he gives this shiur, every year he gives this shiur before Pesach. So Rav Schechter points out that the Mishnah Berurah changed the world. Because traditionally Jews assumed the chametz on Pesach was hetera bala, not isura bala. And the only reason why we kasher the spit with direct fire is because it's a chumrah of Pesach. But fundamentally, chametz is hetera bala. Now, this is very important, okay? This is very important because from now on, we're just going to talk. We're going to kind of ignore the sources because it's getting late. How do I kasher my oven? Okay, I have an oven. Right? Most of us have ovens at home, right? So what's the what goes wrong in our oven that we have to kasher? What's the concern?
Well, maybe the steam would.
So I have steam of chametz that maybe is going to go up to the top of the oven and come back down.
Right, and it's going to
maybe some of the food splashed.
Right? Yeah. Maybe some of the food splashed. Right? What were you saying?
Okay, so something could fall off of the tray.
Okay, food could fall off a tray, food could land in the oven. That's true. Okay. But now, if chametz on Pesach is fundamentally hetera bala, right? If it's fundamentally the equivalent of kodshim, not the equivalent of pig, so then there is no reason I should need libun on my oven. then the way I kosher my oven is through Hagala, through purging it with hot water. How am I going to do that? I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. But we mentioned earlier, I have an equivalent of Hagala called turning my oven up to 450 degrees, the temperature at which straw burns. I kosher my oven that way. That's what Rav Soloveitchik used to tell the guys. Rav Soloveitchik used to tell everyone, you want to kosher your oven for Pesach, repaskin fundamentally, chametz is hetera bala. Therefore, clean your oven out. Even cleaning your oven out is a bit of a chumra, not necessary, right? Because it's libun kal. You turn it up to 550, the highest it goes. Make sure it gets to that temperature. So Rabbi Eider recommends in his book, leave it on for an hour. No problem. Because libun is only required on Yisura Bala, right? The Gemara says that the spit that absorbs kachim, I just immerse it in hot water. So if chametz on Pesach is hetera bala, I don't need libun. Right? Rav Salav, now people make mistakes. Students of Rav Soloveitchik sometimes were not big lamdanim. We have to say this clearly. And students of Rav Soloveitchik say, oh, the Rav said that you could kasher ovens by just turning it up to the highest temperature. That's not true. If I buy an apartment from a guy, and there was real treif in that oven, Rav Soloveitchik would not say I could kosher by just turning the oven up to 550. Only for Pesach, because Pesach is hetera bala, so then for hetera bala, Hagola is enough, I turn it up to 550, good enough, no problem. But for the rest of the year, Rav Soloveitchik did not say that you could kosher with just turning the oven up to 550.
How do you
kosher? What?
How do you kosher?
We'll talk about that, maybe.
Oh.
Okay, so you think like Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler said, well, it's only becoming non-kosher through the steam, so really steam is the equivalent of mayim? Maybe, that's debatable. It's debatable because in Yerodei Yisrael Mitzadi Beisif Zayin, I give you the sources over here on the sheet somewhere, so we assume that the steam of something is always considered like that substance. So if now, there's a whole discussion. The Prima Gadim writes that there's no steam from solid foods, but Moshe assumes that the Prima Gadim didn't really mean that. What he meant is that most often solid foods don't give off a lot of steam, but if you know it gave off steam, there's a whole literature about using the same oven for milchiks and fleishiks, which is obviously related to this conversation. But fundamentally, Rav Soloveitchik is saying, I kasher my oven by turning it up to the highest temperature because it's hetei rabola. The Mishnah Berurah assumes it's Isura Bala. So how would you kasher the oven? If chametz and pesach is Isura Bala, so then, right, if I assume that the chametz is really treif, so then there's a big machlokas. And everyone, no one quotes Rav Soloveitchik in these books. Everyone quotes Rav Aaron Cutler versus Rav Moshe. Rav Aaron Cutler felt the way I kasher an oven is, turn it up to the highest temperature. Even for treif, even if the guy had pig in there. Rav Aaron says, when it says that you need libun in an oven, that's like a pizza oven, a baker's oven, where the food is directly touching the oven surface. By us, we don't have food that directly touches the oven. Maybe occasionally if something spills. That's not so common. And if it gets spilled, the odds are it will get spilled on the area where there's fire. It might be burned up in a second. The Taz writes in Siman Sadi Beis that if there's a fire right there, it could be burned up in a second. It won't become
splashes.
Right? Splashes might be the real issue. Splashes, you could kosher with Hagola anyway. Right? Maybe if a solid food fell down, that would be more of an issue. You have a... But the fact is, Rav Aaron Cutler said only a pizza oven requires libun. A regular oven you could kasher with Hagola. Right? Or you could kasher a regular oven with this easier form of libun. You clean it out very well. Rav Aaron Cutler said, you turn the oven on to around 550, leave it there for an hour, you kasher the oven. Rav Moshe is the one who said that ovens require full-fledged libun. That's a huge chumra. Rav Moshe is assuming, first of all, that chametz is isura bala. Second of all, right, all of the steam in the oven, every crevice in that oven requires 750-degree fire to purge, to get that treifus out of the oven, to get the chametz out of the oven, right? So you have to use your blowtorch until, I know many people who destroyed the ovens trying to do this, right? Or, if that's cumbersome, if Moshe says, you know what you do? You buy a box, a metal box. They sell these in Brooklyn. You buy a metal box, you stick it in your oven. You also have to buy a little thermometer to go with it because you never know the temperature inside the metal box. It's not going to be exactly the same as the temperature outside of the metal box. That's what you do, according to Rav Moshe. You're not really cooking in the oven because the oven is mamish treif. Now, a self-cleaning oven hits around 850 or 900 degrees. That certainly is equal to libun chamor, right? Even according to Rav Moshe, self-cleaning, you can put anything into the self-cleaning cycle, become kosher. Anything besides plastic that would melt, or earthenware stuff that can't become kosher anyway, put it into the self-cleaning oven, everything gets kosher, assuming it survives. That works. The only thing is that the later terms say that the self-cleaning cycle only gets to be 850, 900 degrees inside the oven chamber. The oven door doesn't get to that temperature. So some say that according to Rav Moshe, even in the self-cleaning cycle, you have to cover the oven door. Then there's discussion that some of these oven doors have glass. No? On the door. Ashkenazi practices, we don't kosher glass at all. No? For Pesach, at least. So it's a discussion. We don't kosher glass at all. We don't kosher glass for Pesach. Certainly for Pesach, we don't kosher glass. So then the practice is that if you want to hold like Rav Moshe, you cover the entire oven door, especially that glass area. That's how you kosher your oven. But again, according to Rav Soloveitchik, koshering is much easier. Turn it up, right? It's considered a terrible. We solve all the problems. Okay. Yeah. So according to Aaron Kotler, you kosher regular treifas, also because the regular treifas, if the treifas got indirectly, so then I need to do libun on that one area. I don't have to do libun on the rest of the oven. That one area where the treifas fell, take a blowtorch to that one area. Don't blowtorch your whole oven. Rav Moshe says you have to blowtorch the whole oven.
Libun kal accomplishes the same thing as Hagola, and Hagola accomplishes the same thing as libun kal.
Yeah, always. Always. So Rav Aaron Kotler felt that because the prima gadim is machmir, that even for libun kal we should clean it out. So if you could do that, you do that. It's a good idea to try to clean your oven at least once a year anyway. Right? So what you do is you take some easy off, you go in the oven, you clean it out. Also, the issue is, in all seriousness, that if there's going to be some drops of chametz in the oven, maybe you have to be nervous that chametz will get into your food when you're cooking. So you're cleaning the oven very thoroughly, more as bedikas chametz than as a din of kashering.
I thought
that the heat might destroy the chametz, but maybe there's going to be a drop of chametz that's there still. So what you do is you go into the oven with your easy off, you clean it out as well as you can, according to Aaron Kotler. Again, if rust, you can't... Right. Okay, that's what you do.
And that works for Yisurabala also.
If it's Yisurabala, Rav Aaron Kotler would assume the same thing, besides that one area where the Isser is touching the oven directly. On that one area, you would need... you'd need a blowtorch. Right. Okay, very quickly. How do I kosher a sink? Okay, sinks, counters. How do I kosher them?
Water.
Okay, oh, good. So, first of all, when we talk about koshering, you cannot, generally speaking, we do not kosher porcelain. I think porcelain sinks are not so common anymore. Now most people have stainless steel sinks, which makes it much easier. Stainless steel you can kosher. Porcelain is very difficult. The kosher can't be koshered at all. Fine. Now, what's the concern with the sink? So the concern with the sink, odds are, is that the chametz hit the sink bottom, but probably with a flow of hot water. That's probably becoming non-kosher through Eroi. Remember, the way something becomes non-kosher is the way I kosher it. So if it became non-kosher under a flow of water hitting a noodle, hitting the bottom, so then that's non-kosher through Eroi. I could kosher it just by pouring hot water in the sink. By boiling water. I have to pour the boiling water in clean the sink out. Whenever I kosher with Hagolah, I have to clean it out thoroughly, clean the sink out very carefully, and then pour the boiling water in all the areas, right? Make sure that the kettle is still bubbling or as much as possible, as close as possible to bubbling. I think it's impossible to do Eroi when it's 212, just physically speaking. Right? It just doesn't work. Yeah.
Like, since it's Eroi, you have to, like, actually make sure that the kettle there.
I should try to I should get the kettle to hit every area. Now that's complicated. That's a very complicated procedure. It can take time. It's possible. There is also a concern with the sink, that the bottom of the sink, sometimes near the drain basket, you can't really kosher, no? You should get a new drain basket for Pesach. Because anything that has very small holes, it can't become clean. If it can't become clean, you can't kosher it for Pesach. Okay, so you can't kosher your drain basket. For $1.99 in the ferreteria, you could buy a drain basket. No, not a problem. Right? Near that drain basket, usually there's a little ring. There could be a lot of dirt over there. That area is very hard to clean out. So, since that area is hard to clean out, you should try to clean it out. If you don't get it clean or you're nervous about it, so you just put some caustic substance over there that will make any chametz that might be there nifsal me'achilas kelev, and then it won't create any problems after.
So,
yeah. The sides of the sink also, because maybe chametz got on the side of the sink, and then my Pesach food will get there. And we assume the chametz, even if it's nosin tan lefgam, even if it got in more than 24 hours ago, Ashkenazim or Machmir, it's going to make the food trafe during Pesach. So we have to be nervous. In certain circumstances, nosin tan lefgam is a problem. Now, so kashering the sink. Now, there's another concern, though, with this sink, though, which is worse than just having the flow of water hitting the noodle on the bottom. Let's say the noodle itself, the hot noodles, hit the bottom of the sink directly. Or the hot kugel, some hot food, a clunk of food, hits the bottom. That's called a duffer gush. In Yoridea, we assume that a hot substance, a hot solid substance that touches something is considered a kli rishon. And if it's a kli rishon, then in order to kasher the sink, you would need to make your, to kasher sink with a kli rishon. Now that's complicated. I used to do this as a kid because this is like so much fun. Basically, what you do is you stop up the sink. You put a buy a new rubber stopper, put it in the sink. First, you clean out the sink, buy a new rubber stopper, fill up the sink with cold water. Okay, take a stone, or a few stones actually. Leave them on the fire for a while. Then take tongs. Do not use your bare hands. Okay? Take tongs. Take that stone. Take that stone. Dump it in the water. It boils up. That means you just made your sink into a pot. And you just kashered your pot with a kli, your sink slash pot as a kli rishon. That will solve the problem of maybe some noodles hit the bottom of the sink directly. That will solve the problem that maybe the sink became non-kosher for Pesach with a kli rishon, halachically. Now, that process might be complicated. It also is dangerous if you have little kids around. So, based on the danger that's involved, there are people who use a sink insert on Pesach. The sink insert solves the problem that maybe there was a kli rishon that became non-kosher in the sink, and therefore they kosher with a sink insert. This is the same thing that the Mishnah Brewer recommends going over to the top of the next page about how to kasher a countertop, no? The Mishnah Brewer is very nervous. My counters, right? How do the counters become not chametz stick? Well, a million stuff goes on the counter. That's how they become chametz stick, right? The Mishnah Brewer is worried that maybe the counter became chametz stick with a kli rishon. Maybe I take a hot noodle kugel and I put it down directly on the counter, and then, right, since we assume that a davar gush is like a kli rishon, so it's like it's cooking on the counter itself, and then the only way I could kasher my counter is with an even meluban. Okay, even meluban basically means I pour hot water on my countertop. That's like eri, that's pouring the hot water after the countertop is cleaned. Right, assuming I have a stone countertop, right, or a metal countertop. If you have formica, you just cover it up. If you have formica, we don't kasher formica for Pesach. We have stone or metal, you pour the hot water, but then what about that hot kugel that was there? So the Mishnah Brewer says, use an even meluban. Take a stone, run the stone over the hot water on the countertop. It's going to sizzle. It's like making a kli rishon. That's how you kasher a counter. This is very dangerous. Do not try this. I mean, I've tried it, actually. It's a lot of fun. But it's not... My father and I, my mother used to, like, basically say, okay, guys, right, you're going to kasher tonight. I'm leaving the house. Like, call me when you go to the hospital. That was... So we had a lot of fun, like, kashering. But especially like after I had learned the DNIM. Like I was using FMLUBANs everywhere, and I was like having so much fun. It was great. But the Mishnah Berurah says use an FMLUBAN. Honestly, if you don't use an FMLUBAN, so those areas where there might have been a HaKogel that touched, so then you should cover those areas. Right? So you kasher it. The practice generally, the way the Mishnah Berurah presents it, is that you first kasher it, and then you cover it over anyway, just in case the counter became treif with a kli rishon. Using an FMLUBAN can actually, in addition to being a little bit dangerous, it can ruin certain types of countertops. You have to know what you're doing. Okay, fine. So what else do we have to talk about? We spoke about sinks. We spoke about countertops. Dishwashers. Okay, so koshering dishwashers is a whole discussion. Rabbi Eider recommends in his book not to kosher dishwashers for Pesach because they're too hard to clean out. But Moshe Feinstein actually says in his Tshuva, do kosher, how to kosher dishwashers. In the OU Kosher for Pesach guide this year, they have discussions about how to kosher dishwashers. Basically, they tell you that you run a cycle on hot, and then you put in some hot stones. You should get separate racks for Pesach if possible. Again, if there's any specific questions about koshering dishwashers, we could take them separately. I think most people in the Heights don't have dishwashers. Right?
I have one.
You have one? Oh, wow. Okay. So maybe we have to discuss it more than I thought.
Microwaves.
Let's talk about microwaves. Okay. So microwaves are generally made out of plastic. Plastic, here's a question if we can kosher it or not. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva that since that plastic is a new material, maybe it can't be koshered. Maybe it's like earthenware. That we don't kosher. Others point out that if you read the Prima Godim says that the only thing in the world that we don't kosher is earthenware. Therefore, plastic we would kosher. There's a whole discussion about whether we kosher plastic. The general practice is that we try to avoid koshering plastic, certainly for Pesach. Okay? In other words, the OU koshers plastic for Pesach. Many people kosher plastic for Pesach. There's definitely what to rely on. You just have to know what you're doing. Right? And you have to know how to kosher it. If it's a type of plastic that could get ruined, right, so then it has a din of earthenware. Anything that you might ruin in the koshering process, you're not allowed to kosher. Because you'll be nervous or worried that you might not heat up the water enough, so therefore we don't kosher anything like that. So how did I do the microwave? So the microwave has plastic walls. Basically, the assumption is that the type of plastic in the microwave became non-kosher through the steam going up to the top or through the spillage. The steam going up to the top, so then you can kosher. They say, well, you put a container of water in. Assume you kosher plastic. Most of the microwaves, they don't have metal on the inside. Wasn't today, I think, have plastic on the inside. What? Well, the older microwaves used to have metal on the inside.
What?
Huh? Convection microwaves have, right, metal on the inside, correct. So for those, it's easier to kosher, technically, no? It became non-kosher just through steam. So what you do is you clean it out thoroughly. You put a cup of steam, you could put a cup of water in for around 10 minutes of microwaving time. It steams up the whole thing, right? Then wherever the steam got is kosher. You should do the steam cup in a few different parts of the microwave. Now, the biggest issue with the microwaves, though, is as follows. It's two issues. It's a glass tray at the bottom of the microwave. We don't kosher glass for Pesach. Buy a new glass tray for Pesach or cover it. Right? We don't kosher glass for Pesach.
You're not putting your food directly on the glass.
You don't put the food directly on the glass, generally, right? But still, we don't kosher. Still, we're nervous to put food on a non-kosher surface that is cooking, you should cover the glass tray for Pesach or get a new glass tray. But not with aluminum foil, right? You put aluminum foil in your microwave, bad things will happen. Right? That's correct. Yeah.
For a microwave, would you, besides using the water, would you have to wait 24 hours?
Yeah, so you should wait 24 hours before you kosher, according to Shulchan Aruch. According to Rav Soloveitchik's understandings, Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to wait 24 hours. Rav Soloveitchik said you don't have to. The Mishnah Berurah says you should wait 24 hours before kashering anything for Pesach with Haggalah. Right, that was the previous conversation.
What about just generally during the year?
During the year for non-kosher, you definitely have to wait 24 hours.
Same thing as
because then it's really non-kosher. Chametz in some ways is more lenient because it went in. Chametz is kosher now.
In the microwave where you put
same thing.
Kosher.
You clean it out,
right.
And you put in the cup of hot water, and you get the steam. You do it a few times, and you make sure the steam gets everywhere. You kasher the microwave. But the issue is the glass tray at the bottom. And the issue also is that often the microwave is in the corner. You have like this area with lots of little dots where the light is. So that area is very hard to clean out. And so you have to be very, very careful to clean out that area. I personally don't like the water cleaning kashering. Everyone says that you kasher microwaves with just the steam. I personally think it's better, if you can, to take a thing of hot water and just pour it all over the microwave, the same as I do in my sink. I think if I do that in the microwave, I think it's better. But the common practice is not like me. The common practice is that you kasher a microwave with this cup of hot water that steams up. Yeah?
I assume the cooktops, the grates on top of the stove, okay. That's the same.
So the grates on top of the stove, may Iker Hadin, the grates on top of the stove are not treif at all. Because the Taz rates that since the fire hits it, right, everything gets burned up in a second, it never became treif. For Pesach, it says in Shulchan Aruch that we're machmer, that's called a chatzuva in Shulchan Aruch, that's a tripod. We're machmer that we kasher that for Pesach. The best way to kasher those is you put a blech on top of the fire, so that the fire will spread out all over the grate. And when the fire spreads out all over, that will kasher with the direct fire. You're kashering with libun that entire tripod that holds the pot. The common practice is that we cover everything on the range top anyway. Even after we kasher, we generally cover everything. You put heavy-duty tinfoil. The area in between the burners on the stove is covered with porcelain enamel. Porcelain enamel can't be kashered the way we assume. You have to cover that up. And you cover also the basin underneath the where the fire is. Yeah.
I think some people, what they do if they're going to kasher those grates, when they're burning out the oven, they put the grates.
Yeah, you can put the grates in the oven, You can put the grates in the self-cleaning cycle. Certainly, if you have one, that works. Yeah, you had a question.
It's along the same lines.
Yeah.
What happens if your stove is not in the grates? It's a glass top.
Okay, so a glass top grate.
No, it's just glass top. There's no grates.
It's just glass top, and there's electric burners underneath. So this is not the easiest thing to kasher. Generally speaking, what you do is you turn on the electric as hot as it gets, and that will burn out the area directly where the pot goes. The rest of the area, we assume you can't really kasher. Any food that will fall there becomes, you don't eat on Pesach, becomes treif. Any food that falls in between. Now, do not try to cover some of these glass top ranges with metal or anything like that, because that could ruin your range top. Again, I have lots of experience ruining appliances before Pesach, so don't try to do that. What other advice I have? Oh, yes. One year, so someone I know tried to kasher the sink by unscrewing all the parts of the sink, and he couldn't figure out how to put it back together. Don't do that. Yes. What else is there to discuss?
When you're talking about the grates, do you have to leave on the fire for a certain period?
You should leave the fire on for... With the blowtorch, they say to leave it on for 7 minutes. With the grates, usually, if you're going to put a piece of metal on top so the fire spreads, you should leave it around for 10 minutes to make sure that the fire really spreads. Now, be very careful. Another mistake I've made, right? After that piece of metal is on the fire, it's very hot. Do not try to remove it with your bare hand. I've made all these mistakes. don't do that. Okay. What else? Someone asked me tonight about kashering a plata for Shabbos. You know, a hot plate. To kasher the hot plate. How do you do that? So I think the hot plate is actually not that complicated to kasher. The best thing to do, honestly, is that if you could pour hot water on it, hagolah, then you should cover it for Pesach. I think that would work. Okay. Yeah.
Water coolers?
Water coolers. Yeah, so that might be a real issue because during the year you're not comfortable. I don't know if you could kasher those because they're plastic. So you should not use the hot water. I actually was thinking about this a few days ago.
You can use there but water.
No,
What? No, but when I take other stuff near it, the hot water is going to get chametz. You're not careful all year long. Anything that was out all year long, again, this is chumra de chametz. May ikra din, I can make a case, okay, but factually speaking, we're very careful. And I don't think you should use the hot water from the water cooler. The cold water, if it's all cleaned out nicely, should be usable. Yeah.
What about a hot water urn?
A hot water urn? A pump urn?
Yeah, the pump urn.
So,
those are fine as long as you like cover the bottom so it doesn't have to
touch. But, well, there's the plastic inside and the plastic on top. How am I going to kosher that?
Turn the urn on.
But if I turn the air, no, but the water doesn't get up that high. The water doesn't go beyond, right? If I turn, when I turn on the urn, the water is going to be bubbling inside the urn. You could kosher in those urns. It's great for koshering, right? Because the water is bubbling the whole time. But the plastic area on the top and where the water comes out, that plastic little faucet.
As I run the water through there, it's going to be the water section.
It's coming out of the irui. Maybe, but the other way, the bottom part. No, because it's near chametz all year long, and whenever it's near hot chametz, again, probably we can make a case that would be okay, but I think it's sound advice to try not to use anything that was out. It's probably sound advice not to use anything that was out all year long for Pesach. So get yourself, if you could get a new pumper for Pesach, you should get a new pumper for Pesach. Yeah.
Have a pen.
A pen?
A pet.
A pet. Yeah. You have to sell your pets for Pesach.
No.
No, very important.
Okay.
Yeah. No, because the pets eat chametz on Pesach, and then you're getting hana'ah from the fact that instead of you giving it food, you're getting hana'ah from the chametz. So you have to sell your pets for Pesach. You have to do all the kinyanim on the pets separately. Or the goy should pick it up. What?
Or just don't feed them
chametz. Right.
So that means you
That's
would have to kosher their bowl?
Kosher their bowl?
If it's metal. Because you don't want to have
no.
Kosher cleaned out.
No, you clean it out. You don't have to kosher it. You're not cooking in it or anything. No, you don't have to kosher it. It's like Leichter. You don't have to kosher your Leichter either. Yeah. Okay, those are two coolest for tonight. Okay, thank you very much for coming.